More so since I moved into 15, where there's an acre of space, and you have to try and figure out, well, how am I going to cut down their space? And it's just, I suppose, looking at the trends, like you said, what way they're going to step. And like, I know myself, I'll always step right to left. So anyone telling everyone my story now that I'll always step from my right leg onto my left.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe, together with Guinness. Game changed.
Hello and welcome along to House of Rugby Ireland here on Joe together with Guinness. I'm Eimear Conslan and I am joined as always by Ian Madigan. Happy New Year to everybody and to all our listeners. Ian, Happy New Year to you. Are you a man who sets New Year's resolutions or sets goals in the new year each year?
Yeah, thanks very much. Happy New Year. Great to be back on the show. Yeah, I am actually. I've always been one to kind of have a look back to look forward, at the turn of a new year and set some new goals, kind of varying from, personal goals, everything from, aiming to get to bed a bit earlier and get up a bit earlier is usually on the list. And then I'll go through, standard kind of training stuff, trying to set myself some goals in the gym or some, speed goals for our field sessions. And then I'll also set some kind of wider ones. For example, this year, be hoping that Ulster win a trophy would be on the goal, see if I can get back into the Irish squad. Stuff like that. What about you?
Yeah, I'm good for resolutions at the start of the year. Now this year's a bit different because I'm at home in Clare. I feel like I'm still on holidays and I'll start back once I get back to work again next week. But I think I was looking back at my 2020 diary the other day. I was cleaning out my car and I found it and it just stopped in March. But I had written down goals and I think some of them were completely unattainable back in January. Looking back at them, like I think one of them was to bench press 70 kg. I weigh 70 kg, so that was my plan. But then COVID happened and then I think I had two 20 kg dumbbells throughout the whole of lockdown. So my plans of benching that 70 kg was completely out the door. But yeah, like that, I suppose you break them down into what your plans are for next year. And I suppose there's long term, medium term, and then short term goals. Like every week I'd have a plan, but every session I'd have a plan too. Obviously as a squad, you'd have okay, we're improve our defense. But personally, it might be tackle every line break or try and, not miss a tackle or try and get a few kicks into your training. So like I think there's different types of them as well, but I suppose as a squad, us looking towards 2021 World Cup qualifiers, I suppose, are what's the main thing for us, and then hopefully get to that World Cup. And I suppose personally, let's hope the wedding gets to go ahead. There's a lot of planning involved, and I'm sure you're the same with hoping that you'll actually get to have your day out this year as well. But yeah, look, it's hard. I think last year made me think about, you can plan as much as you want. You can schedule in your games, like all our Six Nations games are scheduled in, all our qualifiers and stuff are there. And the World Cup is set for New Zealand in September. But if 2020 taught you anything, it's that, I think I'd got the calendar at the end of the year and I just tore it up. And I was like, God, that was nothing like we planned it was going to be. So I suppose take every week as it comes is the main thing.
I find with like goal setting, it's kind of daunting the first or second time you're doing it. You don't know really where to start, and the idea of keeping your goals attainable, it's really hard when you're doing it for the first time, because you want to be optimistic and you want to set your bar high, I'd be putting them down the first time I'm doing it, like 100% tackle success, 100% goal kicking accuracy. I'm going to bench 200 kilos. I'm going to squat, 200 kilos. And, I think when you do consistently, so let's say every 3 months you reset your goals, you'll look back and go, okay, well, I only had 70% tackle success. So maybe it's a bit unattainable to go for 100%. So you kind of, the more regularly you do it, the more you realize what's attainable for you, how you can push yourself, but not, you don't want to leave yourself dissatisfied looking back at goals. You set yourself, let's say 10 goals and you've only hit one of them. I think it's got to be a satisfying process that you enjoy doing. Is that something that you found, over the years?
I think the best part of setting goals is being able to like take them off at the end of the week or the end of the year or the end of the month. You know, like I'm definitely a sucker for lists. I'd always make a list, but it might be, you know, get a yoga session in this week, or get, you know, get some sort of meditation in, or, you know, I have a weekly plan and it's great taking them off. But then on the other side, it's not good when you don't take them off and you feel like you probably failed a little bit. Similar to that, you know, 100% tackle rate. And if you don't get that, you think that you've failed at it. So yeah, like it has to be achievable. So I think I'll plan those a little bit better this year, and hopefully our goals you and I will reach some of our goals at the end of 2021. We'll have to reassess them at the end and see how we got on. It's just the two of us today, Ian, but there's lots of rugby to get into from the latest round of the Guinness Pro 14. We'll not talk too much about the Edinburgh win over Glasgow. We'll have to start off with your game last night, and we will, of course, mention the Connacht win over Leinster, 35-24 win. So Ulster sitting nicely on top of Conference A at the moment, Ian.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, it was a hard-fought win against a very competitive Munster side. You know, I think the pressure was probably put on us before the game when Munster, you know, made it clear that they'd rested a few of their internationals. But they're a side that's been going really well this year, and they have a really competitive squad there. So, you know, with guys getting an opportunity last night, they're all looking to put their hand up to get in again for next week against Connacht and try and get their hand up for selection for the two European fixtures that they have coming up. And, you know, it's a competition that they're going really well in. But no, it was a very satisfying win for us. We, you know, got off to a good start. I thought our backs played really well, in particular in the first half. I thought we moved the ball well and challenged Munster in the wide channels. You know, the likes of James Hume running those kind of arcs, same with Jacob Stockdale. And it was great to see Ethan McElroy really stepping up on the left wing. I'm sure that was something that you took some satisfaction in, despite it being against your favourite team.
I know, not so happy with that, the result. But, you know, Munster, as we said, you know, an inexperienced team. Well, 14 changes made from the last day. But, you know, it's the style of rugby that they're playing. They're playing well. You know, Munster will be happy, given the squad they named, you know, to come away with the bonus point. A losing bonus point there as well. So Ethan McElroy was phenomenal last night, and, you know, deservedly won player of the match. This season has been the young guys coming up, be it in Ulster, be it in Munster, be it in Leinster, Connacht, you know, it's the younger guys coming up. And I thought himself and James Hume were particularly well. You know, James Hume was under immense pressure to get that ball away, and just teed up Stockdale, you know, on the outside on a really nice overs line, completely cutting out the defence. And that's the one thing Ulster did really well last night, was they spread Munster from width to width. And, you know, your set plays were really good. It came off a really good foundation from your set piece, and you just tore them. You just sat down players with, you know, dummy lines, with Nick Timoney running hard lines, and obviously such a big ball carrier. They're going to focus two or three people in on top of him, but then you have, you know, decoy lines at the back door, and it was just everything about your attack. It was really, really nice to watch, and really, really exciting to watch. You guys have to, you know, be excited for next week after two really good wins in the Guinness Pro 14.
Yeah, certainly. You know, we're under no illusions how tough it will be going down to Dublin and the RDS to play Leinster. I think, off the back of them being beaten by Connacht, they'll be looking to bounce straight back. I don't think they're a side that's lost two in a row in a very long time. But look, we're a side that's full of confidence. You know, we've been deserving of our win streak in the league, and we'll be going down there knowing that there's a huge amount on in our conference. You know, if we can beat Leinster this weekend, I think we could push, you know, maybe 13 or 14 points clear. Now, I know they've got a couple of games in hand, but look, it's great to see the four Irish sides dominating. You know, even with Connacht's win there and getting 5 points, it's all to play for there. You know, if they go to Thomond Park at the weekend and beat Munster, then suddenly it becomes, you know, a gap of maybe only 3 or 4 points, and with Munster still having to play Leinster, you don't know how that game's going to go. If Connacht can go on a bit of a win streak, that could be a really competitive conference, and hopefully it will lead to an all-Irish final in I think it's March or April time.
Yeah, absolutely. It is really great to see the Irish sides, you know, not just winning, you know, not just being on top of the conferences, but actually playing some really good rugby. Like Munster, the last few weeks have been playing some really good rugby. Ulster, you guys are playing some phenomenal rugby. And Connacht, you know, even against Racing a few weeks ago in the Championship of Rugby, I know they've had three losses and last weekend the sports grounds, you know, played some good rugby too, but just, you know, it's just who's playing the better rugby at the minute. And Ulster happened to do that last weekend. And I suppose going back to last night's win again with Connacht against Leinster, you know, they deserved that win. They were absolutely brimming with confidence, and a huge, huge, massive win for Connacht on the road to beat Leinster in the RDS. You know, it's not something that comes around very often. I think it's only Connacht's third win over Leinster in Dublin in 70 years, you know, so that's it's some achievement for Connacht.
Yeah, certainly. Like we knew last week when we were preparing to play Connacht that they're a side that have really added layers to their game this year. You know, I know Nigel Carlin, who runs a large part of the attack for Connacht. He's a really smart guy, and you can see he's brought in some really kind of innovative plays. You've got to be really switched on. Like they run kind of their lines against the grain are super physical, and you know, they've lots of forwards who can kind of hold their feet and get their timing right. So it's like maximum level of contact at, you know, at the tackle line. And then obviously the likes of Sammy Arnold and Tom Farrell in the centre, who, you know, also do that really well. And when you've someone like Jack Cardy pulling the strings out the back of them, and, you know, they've got some real class now in the back three as well. I think Porch is a fantastic player. He's obviously come from the sevens background. He's a very agile guy. He's clearly got top end pace. And then the likes of Watton and Matt Healy on the wings, you know, they've a really, really good side. And we knew last week that we were going to have to be at our very best to beat them. And I think for us, it was one of those games where, you know, things just fell our way and we were able to keep our foot on it. And, you know, we matched them physically. And but look, I knew for Connacht going down to play Leinster, I thought that was going to be a really tight game. They're a side that's really been building, and it would have really hurt them to have gone and lost three games in a row when, you know, they were very close to beating Racing away from home. They put it up to Bristol, and in fairness to the Bristol pack, they probably just overpowered them. You know, they got their maul going, and, you know, that's a relatively easy fix. And, you know, that was something that they got right, you know, against Leinster. And, you know, fair play to them. They had a clear game plan to get up off the line defensively against Leinster and shut them down. And I think we really saw that last night. You know, you had a lot of the Leinster attackers having to, you know, throw a dummy and step back inside. And the Connacht's wall in defence was just excellent. You know, they just kept getting up off the line and hitting hard. And look, it was good to see. It's good for the league to see Leinster beating this. You know, they've been on a win streak, I think, since, you know, April 2 years ago. And look, credit to them. You know, they're a fantastic side, but yeah, it was good to see them beaten.
Yeah, it actually was, you know. And it's even listening to the commentary last night of the game, you know, it's the same thing week in, week out for commentators and for journalists and for people like us who are trying to talk about the game, you know, with the Leinster, it's the conveyor belt. And it's nice for the game, especially the Irish game, to see teams like Leinster being beaten by teams like Connacht who are playing such good rugby. Connacht got off to the ideal start. They went up 12-0, you know, something that you dream of. You dream of a start like that, but it came from that defensive line speed like you spoke about. You know, they had that aggression in defence from the very start. They almost played Leinster's defence against them. Like, Leinster are traditionally a team that will show really high in the edges and force teams to do the extra skillful find. And I think they almost did that Leinster-style defence against Leinster. And it continued all the way through to like the 81st minute. You know, Connacht never let up on their line speed and they were completely physical in everything that they did. But a 12-0 lead, an intercept, you know, few intercept tries, their defence was phenomenal. I think they managed to pin Leinster back where, you know, they were a bit weak, you know, not weak, just inexperienced in their back three. You know, two out of the back three were getting their first. I think Jack Carty, with a player of the match performance, did really well in identifying the space in the backfield, and obviously getting two first half tries. And he played really well last night. But someone that I think that isn't getting quite a lot of attention like they should have was Tom Daly. I think he was phenomenal in the centre last night. You would have played a bit with him in Leinster in your time there.
Yeah, I think Tom's a fantastic player. He was coming through the academy when I was in Leinster a few years ago, and you know, he's a big, massive lad. He must be over 110 kilos. You know, I remember my first game back, we played Connacht in the Aviva, and I think my first tackle was Bundy running over me on 5 yards out and scoring a try, and then my second tackle was Tom Daly, and I knew all about it. You know, he's got good agility. You know, he's able to work his feet. Not someone you can just plant your feet and look to, you know, pull him over the top of you. And his timing in contact is very, very good. You know, he drives his legs really well. And as well, you know, for a big guy, he's got a very good passing game. And, you know, the defensive read he's made there, which ultimately sealed the win, was fantastic. You know, he's come up on the outside shoulder, so he's able to mark the man opposite him if the ball does go to him. But he's also kept line of sight on the ball. So as he's seen the ball in flight, he's probably realised, oh, I'm going to have a chance of getting to this. And he's plucked it unbelievably well. And then there was still a lot of work to do. You know, he's got one of the Leinster guys dragging out of him, and he's just rode that tackle and then had the power to get over the line. But look, I'm delighted for Tom. He's a lovely fella as well. And, you know, he's someone, if he can keep this form going, you know, I know it's very competitive in the Irish setup with, you know, the likes of Bundy, Stu McCluskey, Gary, Chris Farrell. You know, there's lots of quality there, but there's no reason to think that he can't offer something different. You know, he's a quality player, and, you know, credit to him last night. I'm sure that was a very satisfying win for him against his old club.
I'd say so, yeah. Especially, you know, he went to Connacht on loan in 2018, and he had, after suffering the ACL injury with Leinster. But like, when he scored that try last night, you know, the joy in his face, like, he was smiling. There's pictures all over Twitter of him just smiling the whole way through to the try line for that try. But it was after phenomenal effort. Like, he had 13 carries for 55 metres. He had 12 tackles, made 2 turnovers, and then that intercept try, you know. He was just a pest in defence, really. And even last week, you know, he managed to bag a try against you guys. He completely ran over Mike Lowry, complete mismatch in size last weekend. But and he set up Alex Wooten for that, his try too. You know, very easily he could have just, you know, put the head down and gone for his own try. But I suppose Wooten was out in the wing completely free. And you know, like you said, his passing game as well, he really has it all. So yeah, look.
Yeah, it was very selfless. Like, and he actually reminds me of Ferg McFadden a small bit. You know, aside from wearing the headband that Ferg donned for a good few years, he's just a very selfless player. You see him, you know, he does a lot of rooking. As you said there, you know, it's one there. If he gets his head down, he's going to score that try. But he's happy to distribute it out and let the winger get over. And he's a real quality player. And you know, he's a guy, when you're on the pitch, you hear a huge amount out of him. You know, he's driving his team forward all the time. And, you know, I think he's probably a defensive leader for Connacht. A lot of the time we saw him last night leading that defensive line and getting up and making, you know, probably the hardest hit and, you know, forcing the Leinster attackers back on the inside. And that was definitely a key to their success last night.
Yeah, he forced one of the new lads on the Leinster team to turn over a ball, to knock on a ball inside the 22. And it's moments like that, you know, that will get give such a huge boost to teams. And, you know, he really was a leader in defence in the game yesterday. But two others that I thought were fantastic last night were Gavin Thornbury and Connor Oliver. I thought Gavin Thornbury and Quinn Roo, both as locks, did fantastically well. And Connor Oliver was excellent as well. Have you'd have played against them down through the years, you know, what are they? They're pests to play against.
Yeah, we had to do a lot of preparation last week coming up against Connor. He's a back row guy who gets over the ball really well. He's a very good tackler. He's got good skills. You know, he's a very good passing game. And we knew that we were going to have to be at our very best to kind of nullify him at the breakdown. He comes up with, you know, 2, 3, 4 turnovers in nearly every game. He's very similar to the likes of what CJ would be doing for Munster. And I thought he had a fantastic game last night. There was a few key passages of play kind of in around the halfway line where either he'd make a big tackle himself or someone beside him would make a big tackle, and he just gets straight over the ball. And just when Leinster were looking to build some momentum there's nothing worse than a turnover penalty on, you know, around the halfway line, and suddenly you're back defending in your own 22. And, you know, we definitely saw that last night. There were some key moments in that game where momentum swung in Connacht's favour. Like, even, you know, as you touched on there, before halftime, Leinster scored a good try, you know, and, you know, missed a relatively easy conversion that could have got the game back to 18-7. You know, going in at halftime, 18-7 down, it's obviously not great, but it's attainable coming back from there. You're only 9 points down, you come out, you get a penalty, and suddenly it's a one-score game. Whereas, you know, Tom Daly got up, forced an error, suddenly they've a, you know, a 5 metre scrum, and they got over for a try in the corner. Jack Carty nails a touchline conversion, and suddenly it's 25-5. You know, it's a 20-point difference as opposed to a nine-point difference. And Connacht are going in with their tails up, as opposed to, you know, at 18-7, maybe doubting themselves, thinking, oh, you know, are Leinster going to come back here in the second half? So that was certainly a huge, you know, couple of minutes. And credit to them. You know, you always hear defence coaches going on and talking about their defence ultimately coming up with points, you know, and it's not just a catchphrase. But if you look at last night, you know, Jack got an intercept, which led to, you know, a try, 5 points. Tom, same again, intercept. And then before halftime, forcing Leinster to make an error. You know, they've ended up scoring, you know, close to 20 points from big defensive plays, and that's huge. If you can do that in games, you're going to be very hard beat.
Yeah, and not to take from Connacht's win, but Leinster, you know, you spoke about moments and turning points in the game, but obviously Sexton going off after 24 minutes was not ideal. Obviously, Kieran Frawley had come out of the game due to injury early on in the week. You know, he was originally named to start. So there's a lot of, you know, mix up in the lead up to the game, but then also Sexton coming off after 24 minutes. Jimmy O'Brien had to take over kicking duties. He's usually a 15, moved into the centre for yesterday's game and then moved to 10. Like, how difficult is that? One for a team, but two for Jimmy O'Brien as a guy, you know, not really used to that 10 position.
Yeah, certainly it is. It's really tough. And I felt for Jimmy last night. You know, I think he's been going really well for Leinster this season and playing really well at fullback. But a lot of the core skills he'd be executing at fullback, even the likes of kicking out of hand, it's on the move, it's reactionary. You know, he's kicking with a different kind of momentum behind him. Whereas suddenly you go into having to do, you know, restarts, kicks to touch, kicks, you know, kicks on phase. They're very different skills. And, you know, as out halves, we're practicing those kind of core skills week in, week out. And, you know, they become second nature. But when you're under the pressure and the cauldron of a match like that and, you know, you're chasing a win, suddenly, you know, a kick to touch can be more daunting than it looks. And same with a restart. And you're just thinking, look, kick to touch, I'm just going to get this off the pitch. But there was times in that game that Leinster needed the ball, you know, 40 metres down the touchline. You go from being on your own 10-metre line to having an attacking 22-metre line out. And, you know, they weren't getting that. And similar when you're chasing the game and, you know, Connacht get another 3 points, you need a really good, accurate restart to win the ball back. And they're the kind of big plays that we've seen Leinster come up with over the years when they've scored, but straight away they've got the momentum back and they've got possession back in the opponent's half. And we didn't see that last night. And part of that was down to not having, you know, experience there in doing those key roles. And, you know, Jimmy can't be blamed for that. You know, he's a quality player in his own right at 15, but the roles he was asked to do last night were very different. And, you know, at the same time, I think he'll have learned a lot from that experience.
Yeah, but it's not just even, you know, he's a left-footed kicker. Obviously, Luke McGrath was used to a right-footed kicker, you know. So even the exits and that, he put himself under a lot of pressure kicking right off a left foot, which, you know, you wouldn't notice from the outside looking in. Well, because it's done so well normally, you know, you only notice how difficult it is when someone who's not used to being in that position is put in there from the outside in. And also for Jimmy himself, you know, Luke McGrath, to work in with the 10 different tens, whether it's Ross or Harry Byrne or whether it's Johnny, but it's a completely different situation there as well. Obviously there was no Ross or Harry Byrne on the bench, so, you know, out halves were they were a bit low on out halves.
Yeah, certainly. Like for Jimmy, kicking on phase at fullback, you know, and Leinster do it really well. They get the ball to the edge and they let the winger or back three, you know, get a kick in. But the skill he's looking to do there is using his footwork, creating space for a kicking channel and then ultimately hammering it down the line. When you're kicking from the fly half position, especially if it's an exit kick, a lot of the time you have two or three, you know, tall forwards come charging at you. It's not necessarily about finding space. It's about getting the kick away quickly and getting it away with height. You know, it's a different skill catching and getting your kick away in two steps as opposed to catching on the run, working your feet, and then finding a kicking channel. And that was definitely one of the challenges last night. And you know, also credit to Connacht. Like they'd have seen that Jimmy wasn't an experienced out half, and he'd be guaranteed anytime there would have been a stop and play, the likes of Conor Oliver and Gav Thornbury would have been talking up, saying, look, let's take this out half's time away, get up in his face, put him under pressure and force mistakes. And I thought they did that incredibly well.
They really did. Another turning point, like the game could have been completely different, obviously, at half time. But then in the second half, Hawkshaw's try was disallowed. The TMO ruled it as crossing. That could have been another turning point in the game.
Yeah, certainly it's an interesting rule that I rewatched the game when I came back last night and I was like, I don't really understand that rule, and sometimes I don't understand it myself. But you know, the reality is, if you're in front of the ball player, in attack, if you're in front of the ball player in your team, you can't make any contact with an opponent. It's different if you're level, or you're coming from behind and you run a good line and, you know, you turn your back into the defender, you'll get away with that. But when it's clearly in front, you have someone of the experience of Sammy Arnold, you know, he wasn't born yesterday. I thought it was very clever. You know, he knows the rule there. He knows that the player is clearly in front of the attacker. He probably felt himself that he was under pressure defensively. He didn't get himself in a great position. You know, ideally he wants to trust his inside shoulder there, keep himself balanced and be able to work off and get to the next attacker. But he's got caught a bit narrow, but at the same time he's been able to think quick enough on his feet to realize, if I put a bit of a shoulder into this guy and shout and roar and throw my hands up, either the ref or the touch judge or the TMO will pick it up. And ultimately it was the TMO who came in and saved him. But it was a lovely passage of play by Leinster, and if they'd scored there, you know, that would have been the fourth try. Now I know they got the four tries in the end, but suddenly they're back within touching distance. Whereas, you know, the flip side is, it's a penalty back in around the halfway line, Connacht kick it to touch, and suddenly Leinster are defending 38 from their line. So that was definitely a big passage of play in, you know, the overall scheme of things last night.
Yeah, 100%. There were some good Leinster performances as well. I know, obviously, there was quite a lot of new players and, you know, a lot of inexperienced guys. But Ryan Baird was someone that's just, I don't know how many metres he made, 63 metres off 14 carries. But he cut through the defence at one stage like a 15 would. Really good player for Leinster.
Yeah, certainly. I remember hearing about Ryan maybe a couple of years ago, talking to one of the Leinster lads, and you're saying, look, this guy's, he's a freak in the gym. I think he CMJ's over 60 centimetres with his standing movement jump, which is just incredible. Like, any score over 50 is deemed very good, but over 60 for a man of his size is phenomenal. It just shows the power he has in his legs. Obviously, we've seen him playing at second row, and he's a very good second row, but I think down to the power and pace, and he's actually got really good footwork for a big guy. I think we saw that at times last night. But there's no doubt that he's definitely one for the future in that Leinster pack, and will be pushing hard to get into that Irish team, no doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose one thing about the Leinster Connacht game, in the lead up to the game, it wasn't as plain sailing as they would have liked. Andy Friend before the game mentioned that he changed his team three different times in the lead up to the game. And I think that's just the life and the world we live in at the moment. And obviously Leinster, you know, we don't know for sure, but there was quite a lot of players not available for selection due to different reasons. So both teams have had positive COVID cases in the last week. How difficult is that you know, as a player, as a squad for the lead up, trying to prepare for an important game like that?
Yeah, it's really difficult. And I think as players, we're beginning to adapt to that, that you nearly become desensitized to it. If you had that much change, you know, two seasons ago, it would really throw you. Whereas now this year, when it happens, players are more likely to take it in their stride. But I suppose just to explain to our listeners on when there is a COVID positive case, it's very disruptive because, you know, generally they'll shut the place down for a day. So no one's going to be in the facilities. That would mean that you could have lost one or two training days straight away. All players and staff would be retested. And then off the back of the case or of the test coming back, your training will still be restricted. So you mightn't be able to do any contact work. And while that's A-okay with me, for some of our forwards, you know, the front row guys not being able to do scrums, some of our back row guys not being able to get their tackling or rucking done, same with our midfielders, that's really challenging. And they can end up going into a game feeling underprepared. You know, but at the same time, it does give you an opportunity to adapt. If it means you're at home for the day, you know, you get on the laptop, you get online, you know, you make sure you watch whatever trainings you've been able to do. You get some extra, you know, analysis work done. And you can get on WhatsApp to your teammates and say, look, these are the plays for the week. This is how we're going to run them. This is how we're going to tweak them. These are the players we're going to target. And you can, you know, ramp up your preparation in other areas to best prepare yourself for the game at the weekend. And I think it's the team that does that the best that can come out on top at the weekend. You know, it is an excuse, but ultimately, like, when you're totting up the points at the league at the end of the season, going into the final, they're not going to care whether you got the 4 points from the other team having a disrupted week or your team getting over the line. So you've just got to adapt and find a way.
Yeah, going back to that point there, I think it's really interesting that it was only when I joined rugby that I really realised the amount of analysis that's done before the game. Like, how much a week would you spend, you know, on analysing the team? Or would you pick out the opposite 10, or would you pick out like the opposite back three? Or what, as a 10, what type of analysis would you do? And obviously every position is different, but there's a significant amount of time spent doing that analysis pre-game.
Yeah, certainly. I do a fair bit of it. If there's information to be had, I want to have it. So I feel it equips me best. Now, we're very lucky. Like, we've got a great analysis team at Ulster that really save you a lot of time. So they'll cut up a defensive pack, which will show, for example, a lot of the attacking scrums or attacking lineouts that the opponents would do. So as opposed to me having to trawl through, let's say, the last 5 or 6 games and clicking into all the scrums and all the lineouts, that could take you 4 or 5 hours. So they'll cut up clips, and it could be maybe a 15 or 20 minute defensive clip. And similarly, they'll cut up attacking clips of the plays that we're planning to do that week. That saves you a lot of time. But I like getting into the individual stuff. So let's say last night, for example, coming up against Scannell, you know, I want to have a look at his highlight reel, see what foot he steps off. You know, he's a great, real choppy left foot step. So, you know, I'd be waiting for him to pull that step out in a game. And I'd be talking to my back row saying, look, make sure you're covering my inside. If I'm going to be chasing him hard, he's got a good left foot step. Make sure you're covering me on the inside. Someone like Dan Goggin, he's a big, strong lad. He's quick. So you've got to be able to hedge your outside if he wants to get the foot down and take you on for pace. But then at the same time, because he's strong and he can run over you, you don't want to leave yourself exposed there. The back three from Munster last night, they're all really good in the air. So it's important for me, if I'm in the front field, that I'm escorting them back to give our back three guys the best chance to get up in the air and catch the ball uncontested. So yeah, there's definitely different areas like that I enjoy spending time on it, and it's satisfying when you've kind of done the prep work and then it happens in a game and it works out in your favor. It is satisfying. I suppose the flip side then is when you get done or sidestepped by a player, you go, oh, could I have prepared myself a bit better? And quite often you can, but I think as you go up the levels and you're playing in the, you know, the European Cup or international games, you're coming up against quality players like Colby and stuff like that. There's players that have a huge amount to their game, and there's, you can't cover everything, you know. Is it something that you would have done, that you do a lot of?
Yeah, I think more so since I moved into 15, where there's, you know, there's an acre of space and you have to try and figure out, well, how am I going to cut down their space? And it's just, I suppose, looking at the trends, like you said, what way they're going to step. And like, I know myself, I'll always step right to left. So anyone telling everyone my story now, that I'll always step from my right leg onto my left, right hand bend. So I'll always, you know, step right leg and then I'll fend with the right hand. So, you know, a lot of, unless you're Colby, you know, you're going to have like ridiculous, like you're not going to have like five or six different types of steps like him. But I remember there was one game, it was a Welsh game, and we were playing against there's a really, really fast winger. And I know that if I gave her an inch, she'd burn me for pace. So I'd try and figure out what way she was going to go. So I had done the analysis and then I just took it, like I took the chance, you know, it's like a goalkeeper in a penalty shootout, just make a decision and go with it. So I ended up, she ended up stepping the way I thought she was going to step, and I tackled her and I was like, it is never, you know, you see the benefits of analysis when it actually works out well and when you actually analyze your opponent to a T to know what way they're going to step. So yeah, it is super, super important. We will finish up chatting about all things analysis and we will move into our Guinness House of Rugby Hall of Fame. So we asked you for your big rugby predictions of 2021. Dylan Mooney wrote, Munster to go a decade without winning a trophy. No, I'm not really impressed with that one. While Len Carmody, who is already in the Hall of Fame, predicted the postponement of the Lions Tour. That leads us on nicely to the news that the British and Irish Lions Tour to South Africa is not for the first time in doubt. British and Irish Lions Managing Director Ben Calvili says a decision on the viability of the tour will be made as soon as possible. In a statement, he says the Lions board will meet throughout January and into February, if required, to review all relevant information and data. After further consultation with South African Rugby, we will update on the outcome of these meetings in due course. In what are the chances of the Lions tour, one, going ahead, and two, going ahead with fans present in the stadium?
Yeah, I think obviously the outlook at the moment isn't positive with, you know, cases breaking out all over the island of Ireland, the UK. South Africa have obviously struggled with it in recent months. But I think it's important to note a lot can change in the space of 2 months. We saw after the first lockdown that we were able to get on top of it. Cases came all the way down. You know, the vaccine's going to roll out hopefully over the next few months. So, you know, you could find come March, April time, we're looking at a very different picture. It'll be interesting to see though as well, like, you know, could they move it to somewhere like New Zealand where, you know, there aren't many cases, or Australia? Obviously it's not ideal, but, you know, I'm sure the South Africans to for them to travel and for the Lions to travel there, they'd rather have it go ahead than have it cancelled. I've even seen it be suggested that the Lions take on France instead. You know, I'm sure they'll find a way, but the outlook probably isn't overly positive at the moment.
No, it definitely isn't. And with the growing cases in South Africa as well, that's not very positive. But the thing about the Lions is, you know, the British and Irish Lions, you know, their supporters coming together as like for once as one, you know, one team, one union. And it's, I think it is about the fans. You know, I think someone in South African rugby said that there was more tickets sold this year. There was more demand. I think they were sold out way quicker than usual this year than ever before from the fans, you know, when the tickets went on sale originally before COVID happened. But, you know, it's about the fans. And I think, you know, it's not going to be the same without the fans traveling, without, you know, the build up, without the stadiums being full, because there will be so many high quality games that it would be a pity not to have the fans there. But then when do you postpone it to? Or I suppose nobody knows the solution to it.
Yeah, certainly. And I'm sure even from a financial perspective, they're trying to figure out how viable is it without the supporters, you know, between ticket sales, you know, the actual product that you're putting on the TV without supporters in the stadium, to the, you know, the packages of the supporters traveling over. You know, it is a tough one to figure out, and I'm sure they're working hard behind the scenes trying to figure out the best way forward for it to happen. And if they are to push it back, when can they push it back to? You know, I think it's a very difficult one with you know, working with the unions when they've got their own tours that are very lucrative for them, whether it's, you know, I think Ireland have planned to tour New Zealand.
New Zealand.
You know, I'm sure, you know, Australia, I think, is being toured by England and South Africa by Wales. So, you know, it'd be very difficult for the home unions to forgo those tours when, you know, the financial outlook for them has been very testing over the last 12 months.
Do you think it would be possible to move, you know, postpone it to 2022? You know, obviously the Olympics got postponed a year. If it is a financial gain, and it is a financial gain, and it is for World Rugby, but then, like you said, I suppose then there's the issue of the summer tour. Like, Ireland have already planned to go to New Zealand, and there's so much that goes on, you know, if you push things out. But I suppose this summer alone, it's jam-packed with the Olympics, and then that's already going to take up a lot of the, you know, the viewership and TV and sports channels and that. But I suppose there is no easy decision, and I'm sure the South African Rugby Union and the Lions board will make the correct decision based on rugby. I imagine that they will.
Yeah. Look, it's a tough one, and I think it's hard to find a right answer at the moment. But yeah, look, it's just one of those ones that they're going to have to work their way through. And you know, as I said, there the picture could change in the space of 2 or 3 months, and please God it will, and we'll get through this second wave, and the vaccine will be rolled out and be successful, and hopefully we'll be back to normal soon.
You're Mr. Positive this year, for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, look, we'll have plenty of Guinness Pro 14 rugby, and then with the Rainbow Cup as well, you know, we will see all those South African teams playing. So there is still a lot of exciting rugby to be watched and to be played ahead of that anyway. Cheers to everybody for watching and listening. Don't forget, you can continue to get involved in our Facebook group and on Twitter. We love getting your input and your feedback, and thanks for all the kind words too. A big huge thank you to producer Pat, Paul Cullum, Anthony, Paddy, and everyone that helped on getting this show together. This has been House of Rugby Ireland here on Joe, together with Guinness. Slongful.
Slot.
House of Rugby Ireland here on Joe, together with Guinness. Game changed.